today what I'm going to do is I just had a message from somebody who's a lady who has chronic pain, and people keep telling her to meditate, and she tells me that she can't meditate in this message. She's rubbish at meditation. And I get that kind of message all the time. And I know exactly what it consists of. And one of the reasons I know exactly what it consists of is because that's where I was for 20 years. I believed that what meditation consisted of, and I had no reason to not believe this. This was the big problem. Because the information, it wasn't out there, and it even isn't even out there now, that this is not true. But this is what I believe meditation was. Is I sit down, and through some sort of force of will, I take my stressed, anxious mind that's constantly working, constantly constructing scenarios and repeating language, and I fix it on this single point, the breath, and I gain some sort of transcendental calm that will make me feel liberated from that mind, which consisted of anxiety, stress, and worry. And actually, if you look back at the original meditation texts, that's where the seeds of this delusion about what meditation is were first sown. Because if we read the Bhagavad Gita, for example, the implication is that the man of yoga, so the Bhagavad Gita is all about teaching yoga, not the yoga that we perceive to be yoga, which is body movement, but for most of its existence, yoga has been meditation. And so the Bhagavad Gita essentially teaches meditation. It teaches it explicitly, and it explains that meditation central to all of the virtues of yoga, such as wisdom and renunciation and so on. And the Bhagavad Gita seems to describe this powerful warrior focusing their awareness on the breath and releasing themselves from this mental chatter and the constant bondage of the contents of the mind. And that sowed the seed of complete and utter misunderstanding about what meditation is and how you do it and what to expect from it. And that just continues to this day. In the time of the Bhagavad Gita, books and all texts were written by scribes. If I wrote a book, I would have to describe something to the scribe, and the scribe would then write it down. The chances that the scribe was a meditator would have been tiny. Let's say zero. So you have this situation where somebody who doesn't have a meditation practice is trying to describe it. And of course, the flowery language goes with the aura of mystique that's created around meditation to elevate the credibility of the person that's doing the teaching. And that's stood the test of time as well, because it's almost universal. As a matter of fact, yeah, bar one meditation teacher, two, both of them Buddhists. All of the other meditation teachers that I've listened to online, they all follow the same teaching pattern, which is you notice the breath, the mind wanders, and you bring your attention back to the breath. And they'll say all sorts of things, just like I did, because I taught it the way that I learned it. They'll say all sorts of things about, don't worry if the mind wanders, it's fine, you just keep coming back to the breath. And they're never actually able to describe what's going on and why you're doing it. They just explain that if you do it, you will get these benefits. So it can't be repeated enough that mindfulness meditation changes you because you become aware that your mind's wandering. It's the moment of recognition, the moment that you realize that your mind's wandering, that you're repeating. And that's the tip of the upside down pyramid that all of meditation and all of the benefits of meditation rely on. You can only become familiar with your mind if you continually repeat the moment of recognition in your meditations. And any of the benefits that you gain can only come about through that process of continuously, repeatedly becoming aware that your mind's wandering. And what it does is it changes your reality every single time. What's it doing? What it's doing is bringing your attention, your awareness, away from your internal narrative. And for almost everybody in the modern world, your internal narrative is your reality. There it is, chattering away, good, bad, right, wrong, fair, unfair, good people, bad people, heroes, villains, etc., etc., etc. And it will be doing that in synchronization with all of the other narratives. The most influential groups on narratives in the modern world is basically advertising, marketing and PR, and propaganda. That's it. So that's the creator of our narrative. So learning to release that extricates us from the greater narrative, which has got a lot of really unhelpful concepts in it that will undermine our happiness. Expectations and beliefs, and I have to have this to be happy. If this happens, then I'll be happy. Or there's no such thing as happiness, it's mumbo jumbo. Or the perception of the common narrative to meditation is one of two things. Either you're mentally ill, in which case it's a therapy that you use for your mental illness, or it's some sort of fluffy mumbo jumbo that doesn't really work. And of course, that is also part of what gets in the way of us experiencing the moment of recognition over and over again. Because if we have this nagging doubt in our mind that meditation is anything other than a mental health therapy that is there for people with anxiety, or that it is mumbo jumbo, then that'll undermine our practice. And all of that, this fuzzy perspective of what meditation is, and the complete misunderstanding, not even a misunderstanding, it's a failure to understand. It's an almost universal failure to understand what it does and why it does it. And I can't help thinking that the main reason for that is that the vast majority of meditation teachers in the West don't have a meditation practice. They're just kidding you along. They've learned to teach a meditation from a script or whatever. The idea of teaching meditation from a script, I can't conceive of it at all. Why would you ever need to do that? Surely you'd just describe your own meditation. And there's a big business in these meditation scripts. So I can't repeat it often enough. The mechanism that meditation relies on is that moment of recognition, noticing your mind's wandering, and bringing it back to the breath. The breath is the best place to bring it back to, because it's a source of power. Because when you breathe in, the mind becomes silent, and when you breathe out, you're releasing tension in the body. And that's the nub of it. So that process of repeatedly noticing that our minds wandered comes about like this. And it comes about through awareness of the breath as the way into meditation, or through awareness of the passage of sound, or through both. And over time, we become more aware of the passage of time through sound and through the breath. And there's an awareness of the body as well. So these are all reality checks for the present moment. When your mind's wandering, you're not aware of your body. So the awareness of the breath satisfies both of these present moment reality checks, the awareness of sound moving through time, and the awareness of the body. Especially if we notice the breath is a continuous cycle. And becoming aware of that cycle and focusing deeply on it, sharply on it, noticing the breath all the way up on the in-breath and all the way down on the out-breath. It creates a space for thought to arise in. And that thought is generally a narrative, and then the narrative begins to play out. And a response to that experience is to bring our awareness to the breath. Now, when we're focused on the breath and we're aware of the passage of time, this is our absolute reality. It's the real present moment living world. There's nothing more real than the present moment. And when the mind begins to take our attention, it will then draw it into a scenario or a narrative to play out, which is not real. It's an illusion. It might be based on something real, like much fiction is based on something real, even if it's a memory. There's absolute proof that memory erodes over time, so the more you recall something, the more it changes in the mind. And then we have this pendulum effect. Awareness of the breath. The mind drawing our awareness away from the breath into a narrative. The narrative playing out. The awareness of the narrative playing out. Transfer of the awareness to the breath again, often releasing tension when we get back. Notice that the narrative induces tension. Awareness of the breath, narrative, awareness of the breath, and repeat. That's the perfect meditation that everyone's been taught, implicitly or explicitly, is evidence that they're doing it wrong or that they're no good at meditating. We'll just practice this for the next few minutes. It's called following the breath. So what we're doing is repeatedly refocusing on reality. helps if each time we return our attention to the breath, we gently check in with the body and gently release whatever tension there is in the body through the breath. And if the pull of the mind is particularly strong, then we can create our own internal narrative. Because otherwise, the experience will just become a mind-wandering experience. And as mind-wandering is a less happy place than awareness, meditation can become an unhappy experience. So hence we have all of these extra practices, one of which is noting the breath, which works for some people as a way of helping them to stay with the breath in reality in the present moment. Noting the rising of the breath by saying in the mind, rising. And noting the falling of the breath, saying in the mind, falling, rising, falling. And not only the narrative or scenarios draws us away from the breath, also drifting into the dream state, the hypnagogic state, half waking, half sleeping, if that happens, it's because we're sleep deprived. And then our response is not to fight it, but to stay in that semi-waking, semi-sleeping, dreamy place. And while we're in there, what we do is connect with the feeling, which it seems is universally comforting. So we immerse ourselves in that feeling of comfort and warmth that the semi-dream state of hypnagogic state brings us. And then if we're drawn out of it, before we've had our fill of it, which usually takes 10 or 15 minutes, then we reconnect to that feeling and allow ourselves to be drawn back in. So it's a gentle connection to and with, and a gentle reconnection with the breath. In the same way that it's a gentle reconnection with a hypnagogic state. And every so often, checking back in with the body and releasing any tension there. Balancing the head comfortably, balancing the back by having the elbows by the side. And gently releasing tension with the breath. Noticing the fullness of the breath, the entire breath, causing the belly to rise and fall. Releasing any tension, releasing any suffering, any discomfort, any annoyance, any anxiety. Just letting it drift out of the body with the out-breath. Noticing the breath moving through time. And sound moving through time. And the sound of the bell moving through time. And whenever you're ready, in your very own time, gently return your attention to your surroundings.